and welcome back to High Desert Bits, the podcast that aims to connect our local theater community and support local theater by getting butts in theater seats, or bits. I'm your host, Anita Hoffman. Greenhouse Cabaret is one of Ben's hidden gems, and hopefully not for long. By day, the space is a plant shop known as Somewhere That's Green, and by night, as a 60-seat theater,
65,
that puts on astonishing and intimate productions. They blew my mind last year with their production of Next to Normal, and this fall's production of Wolves. I was so excited to sit down with the mind behind it all, John Kish, to talk about his theatrical journey, what he loves about theater, and the things he's learned through it all. John, thank you so much for joining me.
So tell me about how Greenhouse happened.
Yeah.
How did this, we're sitting in the middle of it, how did this jungle appear?
So long and short of it is that in New York, we were always taught that if you didn't have opportunities at the time, or if you were in between auditionings or gigs, and you weren't booking anything, that you just were to create it yourself. And so that was always the mindset that us artists were always told. And so that's just what I always did. You know, if I was in between things or wasn't booking anything, then I just created it. I created opportunities myself. And so when I came here, I then thought, okay, what are the things that I want to do? And then how do I create it? But even before Bend, I always had this journal where I journaled, and I've said this a million times, but in a cafe in New York, I had journaled this business concept of a plant shop, theater, coffee shop, this trio of the three things that I've done. I've done small batch coffee for 10 years. I have a horticulture degree in sustainable and ecological horticulture. And then now I have a musical theater degree as well. And so those are my interests, right?
Yeah.
And they all go together in a weird way, emotionally, experientially, and also they're tied together thematically by one of my favorite musicals, which is Little Shop of Horrors. Audrey 2 is found, the alien plant is found in a coffee tin. And so it's a play, coffee is in there, and plant is in there.
Yeah.
So it's all tied together by just that little scene. And so I thought that was a really great marketing branding concept. And so that's what I kind of always journaled, and it's never been done before that I can find anywhere in the world. And so that's kind of cool. I just never knew where it was going to start. And I always thought it was going to be Brooklyn or Portland or somewhere kind of funky. And then there's Bend. But it was ripe for growth, and it didn't have a lot of plant life. And theater was very community theater driven. And Bend did let me know that it wasn't ready for professional theater. And so I left. And I went to Portland, didn't really click with Portland. There was a lot of that already happening. There was a lot of theater and a lot of plants already happening. So I was like, well, I did have a really cool community going on in Bend. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to Bend. This was 2017-18, and I'm going to start it. And I know a lot of people said that it's not ready for a professional theater, but also, I also think a lot of people don't know until it's there, kind of thing. And so I just had to kind of pioneer and just kind of put my fingers in my ear and go, la, 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 la.
Yep.
And it's scary. It's a very lonely road. And it's been really, really hard. Luckily at the time, I had an amazing partner that helped me kind of just like stand firm. And I just did it. And I started the plant shop first on my own, just with tip money from a coffee job.
Yeah.
And so that was first. I started the plant shop in 2018. And now the plant shop is 7 years old. And is thriving. It's one of the top plant shops on the West Coast, which is amazing. And so that's huge. Thank you. But as far as the greenhouse goes, the greenhouse is now three seasons in. We are in our 10th production, of main stage production, but we've also done a dozen or so smaller productions, including our Liza's Lounge, which is my piano cabaret series. And so we've started that as well. And then amongst all that is Fertile. Fertile is my drag persona. Fertiliza was started when I did a production of Le Cage aux Faux, which is the Birdcage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to do drag, but that was kind of the gateway. And I did that in 2019. And so I've been doing drag since 2019. And now my drag persona is pretty popular as well. It's been attached to the plant shop and the theater. And now I travel around the States as well doing professional gigs.
Okay.
So that's kind of the third facet of these two businesses, which I also really equate to theater as well. I kind of call it cheap theater. So it's my cheap theater
yeah.
that I can do and pop on and do quickly. But it also makes it interesting
so you go
and
on
fun.
Tour?
I get hired out. So like okay. I just came back actually 2 weeks ago from Gay Wine Weekend, which is down in Sonoma County. And I've done that 3 years now. So they bring me down there and I do multiple gigs down there and meet a lot of people and network down there. And so now I meet other people that bring talent up here. So we've been able to host professional drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race in our theater now because I've met people there. And so it's been really good networking for our theater and plant shop as well. And I help meet actors and stuff like that. So, but yeah, so now we're going into our fourth season that I just announced, season of resilience. This year is the season of humanity, but we're going into a season of resilience next season. And we're officially a professional theater, so we finally got professional rights for all of our productions next year. Nice. So we're actually hosting equity contracts, and yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Congratulations!
I know, it's kind of crazy.
Oh, that is kind of crazy, I love that.
And we have been paying everyone since the beginning, and it's been nuts. We're definitely not fruitful as in like income, but we have been doing what we set out to do, which is paying all of our actors.
That is hard, but it's so gonna pay off.
And I think the people that come see what we're doing.
Yeah. Oh.
So, and they definitely see like the difference in the quality. Yeah. And I think
I bring people. I have 3 seats.
Amazing.
For Wolves, and it's just like I want everybody to see. You need to have a show just for me to fill it, so that all the people that I want to come see shows with.
Thank you.
Will come see shows with.
Thank you.
Because it is what I love about it is it's crazy. You have a 65 seat house.
Yeah.
And the shows that you put on for 65 people every night. How many shows are in a run?
Usually for a musical, we found that 18 tends to be the magic number. For a play, it kind of varies. But yeah, we kind of do like 13 to 15 for a play. Yeah. Tends to be the sweet spot. Yeah. Plays aren't as popular in Bend.
But how do you choose a season?
Yeah.
So last year was the season of?
Humanity.
And this year it's the season of?
Resilience. Yeah.
So you start off with a theme and then you go into.
We never really did that. I just started doing that because it helps me pick. And also with so much political discourse, it also helps kind of people, I don't know, wrap their head around like what shows are. And I think it also helps kind of branding, and it kind of helps with maybe the types of shows we're picking. And it just kind of helps do a through line.
Yeah.
I kind of pick what makes sense, what's exciting, what hasn't been done, or if it has been done, how can we do it differently? And also I talk with people who are interested in working with my theater and who I want to work with and who's collaborative and who is in my tight bubble. And every year's been different, you know. Some years I got the directors first and then we kind of chose shows. You know, we're still in our formation now on year four. So every year has been different. We haven't really found the perfect formula. This year we decided to do co-directorship and that worked really well. But it also means a lot more taxing for me. I have control issues. But it's also because it's just a unique space. And so I have to have control issues because you're dancing with the plant shop. So then it felt irresponsible if I wasn't there. So then I'm like, well, why am I not? And then I would come in to start helping with set build. But then there'd be discourse and lack of communication because the culture of director and producer is not really established in Bend, because the roles that usually exist in the theatrical community don't really exist here in Bend,
right?
Because those professional roles aren't really established. And so it's trying to establish those.
You're out in
the
front.
Right.
Doing all the heavy lifting.
So trying to establish those roles, which exist in metropolitan areas, don't really exist here. And so trying to not educate, but trying to establish those here, it ends up being weird. So it's like, well, instead of trying to make those metropolitan rules work here, let's make what works in our space. So then let's work with me as like a collaborator. Plus I like directing. So we started doing this collaborative co-directing ship and it ended up being beautifully harmonious. And so I worked with Josh Curtis, and then it just happened to be his wife, Natalie Curtis, on this show. Josh Curtis was Next to Normal, Natalie Curtis with The Wolves, and then Richard Choate with Once. And it's been amazing because it's not as much weight on me to direct, but I also get to do a lot of the set design and production and producing stuff. I get to see all the moving parts and be there to help solve the production stuff because I'm at rehearsal.
Right.
So it kind of helps, but also still be able to have a say in direction when I need to as the other person's directing as well. So it's been really, really nice and fluid. So Is that the formula that works for now?
For now,
maybe.
In the next 5 years, who knows?
Who knows? Next season, it looks like I might be on stage more. So we're not sure. So there isn't really a formula, but it's shows I think I pick because it just seems like it fits our. People ask, do I just always pick queer shows? No, I don't just pick queer shows. I pick what I think kind of fits in our space. Sweeney was definitely touching the flame, I think, if anyone wonders. I think that was the biggest we can do. I think Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet is going to be right up there, but I don't think it's as hard of a show. I think Sweeney's technically very hard as far as like a chair and blood and stage magic and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think Great Comet has as much of that. It's more so musicality. As a challenge. But I think people are always expected to be surprised by what we do. We always reinvent ourselves. We always try to keep people surprised and not are always to expect something different than the usual.
Yeah.
I think that is always what we do as the Greenhouse. We always grow something different.
Well, and the thing that I love, I know that you're going to do something here that I'm not going to see somewhere else.
Correct. We paint it. We paint our own canvas because that to me is exciting. I don't want to bring Broadway here. This is not Broadway.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when people are like, oh my God, it's just like Broadway. I actually don't like that compliment because I'm like, I don't want to be Broadway. This is not Broadway. This is a 65-seat little black box in a plant shop in Bend. Our talent is different. Our aesthetic is different. Our mannerisms are different. We are not New Yorkers.
Yeah.
As much as I love New York, we are different. We're Oregonians. Coming from all different walks of life, bringing all different backgrounds. So let's use that to our advantage and make amazing melting pot of diverse, well, trying to grow diversity in this town and bringing all different backgrounds and utilizing that. That's my goal.
Nice.
Yeah.
What a good
as we trudge through the
exactly.
the bland, homogenized Bend. so.
Well, that's okay because I want you to keep pushing your audience and pushing their buttons and getting them to think beyond. I want to walk away and find that I'm thinking about it the next day or a week later. Remember that? I want that to push me to consider and to keep chewing on it and thinking about it.
I had actually a surprising amount of people write me after Next to Normal, saying that I was irresponsible for not having someone talk after the show about how to process their emotions afterwards. And I said, not my job.
I thought you needed to have in the lobby small packets of tissue.
I did.
That were like $10 a piece.
Oh, not free ones?
No.
You're like, make money on tissues.
Yeah, you need those because I walked into that show. I had an idea of what I'd listen to music, and we sat in the first act, and it was just like open weeping the entire time. And then,
well, because I hate people that tell me how to feel before a show. I say, do not tell me how to feel before a show. Do not say, like, get ready to cry before a show.
Oh, man.
And that's one of my biggest pet peeves.
And I can imagine. Yeah. I can imagine that people would be like, well, how come you didn't?
I had a warning. There was I had a warning in the lobby. I had a suicide hotline in the lobby. It was in the program as well.
There was so much in that show to contemplate afterwards. You know, we had tons to talk about.
But that's what people
that
have.
When,
yes.
When he said his name, we're on the floor. It's like,
but that's what after theater bars were for in New York, because you would go to get a drink afterwards to talk about art. And that's what I think happened after Next to Normal is that people didn't know what to do with their emotions. And so they directed it at me and they got frustrated. But I'm like, what a beautiful moment, because it was like, that's where you turn to your loved ones or your friends and you have these deep conversations and you talk it out with each other. Or you call up your therapist if you have one and be like, yo, I would love to schedule a session because I have a lot of feelings that this show brought up for me. Because people are so comfortable right now. And so when art actually moves them because it was really good, like, you need to have these conversations. But they're so not used to actually having art move them like that, that they got angry. And I was just like, good on you. It was my job to move you. We did our job as artists. And now you then go and have these conversations.
And now when you get those letters, you know you're doing your job.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Thanks.
What's the best part of your job?
Ooh, I mean, I do love season selection. That's always exciting to see what's next. The other is seeing the evolution of the actors from casting and kind of not knowing what we're about to then there's always this evolution when it's right before performances, they kind of adopt the space as their home. And I could probably name at least a dozen actors that then like they declare this as their home. And that melts my heart because I can't choose this as a safe space. I can't declare it as a safe space for them. But when they choose it as a safe space for them, it makes me weep openly because I never had that growing up in a small town, closeted queer boy. That was very unsafe for me to be. I grew up in Philomath. And so I never had anyone to look up to. I never saw anyone that was like me. So I always felt that I was wrong, right? And everyone told me that anyone like me was wrong. So I stayed very much not me. And anything artistry-wise, I was removed from me. So I couldn't pursue anything performing arts until I was 24. So I was a late bloomer. Yeah. And yeah, so for me to be able to create something and pay it forward to other people and to see that evolution happen to a lot of people makes me feel like I was meant to stay here. I was meant to find those people in Glass Menagerie. I was meant to like do this and that I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And I was meant to be in Bend. Yeah. It feels weird because I feel so many times that I'm supposed to be in some city or I'm supposed to be doing something bigger than this, but this is huge. Because then when I go to New York and I visit my friends in New York, they're doing great things, but then I tell them what I'm doing and they're like, holy shit, sorry, I'm cussing on your podcast.
It's okay.
But they're just like, you're working more than I am. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm doing very good work and I'm technically constantly booked because I'm constantly working from show to show. Yeah. And I'm running a theater and I'm creating work for other artists and I'm paying them. And so it's very rewarding.
You're touching the future. That's the other part, is that you are a direct link to what's going to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Think about all the people that you're creating that moment of home.
You know?
I was a teacher for 30 years, a drama teacher for 30 years. And you know, when you could find a kid who would find their voice in the light mm-hmm. or find their love behind the light or mm-hmm. on the lighting board or spotlight or they'd go, this is something I connect to.
Yeah. The theater is actually, there's a little plaque on the entryway. It says dedicated to Vicky Howery. And Vicky Howery is actually my sixth grade teacher. And she's the one that saw that spark. Yeah. And she's followed my journey. And she still comes to all my shows to this day. Yeah. And so I dedicated the theater to her because she was the one that saw that spark. And she fueled it, knowing, I think, fully well who and what I was and how I was and knowing that one day I would lean into it. So, yeah, that's why I dedicated it to her because it's like she was one of the first, if not the first person to believe in me to do theater arts. And then for her to then show up at every show.
In sixth grade.
That's awesome. So for her to show up more than any other person, more than my parents, to every show that she could. Teachers are some of the most influential people in our lives. And so, you know, I had her, and then I had Jeff Mitchell was my plant inspiration, and he was my high school botany teacher. So he was my plant book that I wrote to him. So
yeah.
He's no longer with us, but yeah, so that's who the theater is dedicated to. I just thought I'd throw that in there because you said you were a teacher.
I love that. That was good. How can patrons support Greenhouse beyond putting their butts in seats? What do you need? I mean, word of mouth, but you can, you know, you need a bigger theater is what you need.
So. Yeah. I think as cool as it would be to stay here because it is such a cool, unique experience, I think what's in our future is to expand just like the plant shop did. This building is from the 30s. It's one of the oldest buildings.
Yeah.
But because of that, it's so drafty and dusty. And with the plant shop, it's even worse. So like the theater is constant cleaning mm-hmm. and it's detrimental to like our equipment, our lighting, everything. So I think to make it less of a headache is to not have to do the constant transition from plant shop to theater constantly. And so to have a space that just is a theater
dedicated space
would be so nice.
Though having said, you know, interviewing other people, You have this huge luxury of having your space.
Yes.
So you don't have to like go to somebody's house and do a rehearsal. You don't have to, you know, rent a room or something to have a table read. You have the luxury of working in the space that you're going to perform in.
And that's how I started though, right? When I had Topsoil Theatrics, which was my first company, that's how I did. When I did Spring Awakening, I toured it around. Like I was doing what ETC is doing now, back in 2017. And so I toured that around. I did Tower and Belfry and Second Street Theater and everything. Mm-hmm. And so I get that. And we rehearsed at Silk Studios and like tons of places, random locations. So I get that. So it is a blessing to kind of have the space, rehearse in the space and perform in the space. But it is, there's challenges with that too. Yeah. And I'm sure there'll be challenges if we get our another space. The dream would be to like have a theater across the street and then the plant shop on like the other side, just walk across the street. So yes, Butts and Seats is number one way to support us because this is the first year that we're not selling at our shows. So Butts and Seats, number one. Two is word of mouth, constantly spreading by word of mouth about our theater and getting more and more people to know about us is also really, really helpful because we are still new, getting more and more people to learn about our theater half. And then three, donations are great. However, we are a for-profit, so I get it's a harder thing to write off. So the more people can just be a part of it, whether that's volunteering, if you have professional experience painting or building and you have time to donate, that's great. Or you have time to come show up and like help clean out our storage unit sometimes and be a part of that. Family is great. So like certain stuff like that can always be really helpful. But all in all, the biggest thing really need is just like word of mouth, spreading the visibility of our theater, and then getting Butts and Seats. That's really the best way to help. If you have advice about marketing or running our theater or getting us free ads or someone wants to sponsor an actor, that is something that someone can do, is sponsor an actor and pay for their stay and or do homestay. So if they want to host an actor, instead of me paying rent for them to homestay, they can host them in their homes. And that is a huge weight off financially on us and host an actor, a professional actor in their homes. If they have like an ADU unit or if they have a downstairs area that's separate, the actors do often ask for more of a private space and not like just a bedroom and then you share the house with them. They do like more of their private space just because they sometimes work from away. So they like to have their own office area or they like to have a kitchen where they can kind of cook and not feel like they're stepping on toes. But if that's something that people can do and they're hearing this, that would be amazing to do like home share. And that is an amazing sponsor. And we can do trade for like ad space or tickets or anything like that. So that would be amazing help.
Awesome.
That would be so nice. Yeah. And we also have season tickets for the first time really ever. So I think more and more people know about us. We have kind of a really solidified season with Liza's Lounge now, and people know what that is now. And so I think I felt really, really ready to launch our season. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Butts and Seats, people.
That's really seats. The only thing I can say is that really just helps support because also our actors deserve people in our audiences.
Yeah.
So, as much as it's amazing to people, like to get donations, it still doesn't mean there's people sitting there watching.
Right.
And we do offer theater accessibility seats, you know, five seats every performance are priced really low so that there is not financial barriers. So we do offer that. So
did you do preview shows for the high schools?
So yeah, that has always been there since the beginning we started this theater, is that every final dress rehearsal, we offer it to all the high schools.
Awesome.
So all theater kids in every high school gets, I email all the teachers and say, you know, please get me numbers. And so that's just what they did in New York. They email all the theater schools in New York on Broadway whenever there's a preview usually.
Yeah.
And so we got to see a lot of Broadway shows when I was in school. And so I was like, let's do the same thing.
Yeah.
Why not? Especially if we're touting ourselves as professional, like let's show them what's something they can do.
Yeah.
And now some of those kids are in our show right now. So these are 15, 16, and 17-year-olds in this show and they're kicking butt.
Yeah.
So.
Yay! Yay! All right. What is it? What is it you're dying to either direct or to be in, or what do you want?
I think I've like hit all of them, so that's where I'm like kind of now on this new precipice of like, now it's like okay, new things. Because I think Hedwig for the longest time was always the one, and that's what we opened the theater with. We want to bring it back for our fifth year is kind of the teaser you hear to hear first.
So it's my husband's favorite.
Yeah, I think we want to bring it back for sure. Lizard Boy, when I saw that last year at Oregon Shakespeare Festival, that was definitely then put on my docket. And now here we are going to be the third theater in Oregon to do it next year. And that was a funny story. We literally were down this summer in Oregon Shakespeare, and I saw Justin performing in Into the Woods. And I got on Grindr, and I saw him on Grindr, which is the gay app that they mention in Lizard Boy. Yeah. And he was on it, and I literally messaged him, and I said, this is ironic because you talk about Grindr in your musical. And I thought, well, I'll see if he's on Grindr, and he was. Yeah. And I thought, hey, how does one secure the rights to your musical? And he said, hey, here's my producer's email. And so I got his producer's email to reach out about rights via Grindr. Nice. It was the stupidest story, but it was iconic. And then here we are. Now I have the rights to Lizard Boy. And same with like Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet. I never thought I was going to be able to do it. And we're the second theater in Oregon to do it. And so it's just, you know, it's kind of these shows come up and I see them and I get excited about it. And I'm like, I'm going to see if we can do it. And then we get it. And I mean, same with Once. You never would think Once would be able to be pulled off. And yet we found 14 actor musicians that are all going to play instruments on stage, just like we did with Old Man on Moon. Like we're doing stuff that's pretty difficult to do and find. And we're doing it. So it's each one is a new challenge. I mean, even soccer on stage with teenagers.
Yeah.
It's exciting. And so everything that we choose is a challenge, but it's also an exciting challenge. And so that's why we pick what we do. And that's why I get excited. So when you say like, what's your next big, what's your penultimate like show? And I'm like, I think we've done them. I think the ones I set out to do when we opened the theater, I think we've hit all of the ones that I had on my like top 10 now. And so now everything from here is just new and exciting. I think a couple ones that are on my future docket have not been released, and so I don't want to say them because I don't want any other theaters to kind of nab them, but they're not been released yet. None of the rights have been released for those ones. So so it's just a waiting game for those to be released. But there's also new stuff. I mean, Wolves wasn't on my radar until I just found a script and picked it up and read it, and I instantly fell in love. And so it's just sometimes that happens, and it's amazing. And then people bring me scripts. I'm having dinner tonight with someone who is bringing me a script of something that they want me to produce. And so it's just, it's always exciting now that as we grow, more and more people find that who we are and what we are and what we're about. And so I'm excited as to, as we grow, what we can become.
Yeah.
And collaborate. That's kind of my biggest thing is truly collaborate, because I think that's the difference of what we're doing is learning how to actually collaborate and what that means. And it's so rewarding when you actually do it, because there is no ego in collaboration.
Yeah.
And it is truly painting with so many different paintbrushes. And when you do it, people are like, what is this feeling? And you're like, that's collaboration. And it's exciting and it's invigorating.
And it's safe.
And it's uplit. It is so safe.
Something that you can share with others.
Yes. And that's what people feel when they say, I'm home. And it's like, because you actually feel like you're listened to and you feel like you contributed. And you feel like you're being heard and you're being held, but you also are soaring. And it's this really amazing artistic environment that I started, but I think that everyone who's been a part of this has grown. And that's what's really cool and cheesy to tie it back to plants, because it's like it's been our own little greenhouse, you know?
Yeah.
And that's been the really cool part.
Well, and that metaphor is so apt in a variety of ways. I mean, we think that, you know, the theater is this dark, gigantic, dark box, and yet from it, you know, what you create is just like being in a greenhouse.
Yeah, I'm just like, let's try to keep convincing Ben, who is so about beer and outdoor sports, that there is something to be found and enjoyed in the arts, and there have been specifically men, straight men, who have come with their wives begrudgingly, who then walk out of the theater and they're like, this was awesome.
Yeah,
and I'm like, we need more of that. And how to get them to keep coming back. And same with tourists that have come and they've just happened to stumble across us. And then they're like, oh, we're going to keep coming back to your theater. This is amazing as like a destination. So That's.
Do you keep track of your patrons?
Yeah, if they sign up when they get tickets, we have like a mailing list, and so we try to hopefully retain them, and hopefully when they come back every winter to go skiing, that we have a show running. But that would be another positive thing, is if we have another space. I just need more people that want to do what we're doing and kind of start inserting themselves. Some people have told me they're intimidated, and that's sad because I want them
by
the space or me, or that they're not good enough. And I would love to challenge people to challenge that thought in their head. I had that thought that I wasn't good enough to start a theater. Yeah. And look, we're doing it.
Well, it could be that term professional is itchy.
It is.
You know, am I really professional? Can I?
I mean, Meryl Streep said that she's never stopped learning.
Yeah.
And it's all about continued education. As long as you keep teaching yourself, as long as you are open to learning, I think as long as you are open to educating and open to learning constantly, you are an ever-evolving person. That is professionalism.
Yeah. That's a great definition. So if you're one of those people, and you know who you are, then come and see you.
Exactly.
How can people get a hold of you?
Best is on our website or socials, so thegreenhousecabaret.com or thegreenhousecabaret on Instagram. Those are our two best spots. We rarely check our ticket phone, so don't call our phone unless you want to listen to my beautiful voice on the voicemail, directing you to those same website and social media. And then once you're on those platforms, you can kind of direct yourself to wherever you need, whether it's submission forms. We do have our season auditions coming up in November. And this is our third year doing the season auditions. And I'm really happy with the format because it kind of takes the weight off of auditioning each time and having to do the work all three times and just having to do it once. And then we kind of have our whole season lined up. So, yes.
Awesome. Okay. John, thank you so much.
Thank you. And thanks for doing this. Butts in theater seats.
Butts in theater seats.
You can learn more about Greenhouse Cabaret, purchase season tickets for their Season of Resilience, and find out how to get involved at thegreenhousecabaret.com. To find upcoming shows near you or more podcast episodes, you can find us online and on Instagram at High Desert Bits. Get out and do your bits! Get out, do your bits.